Good evening, everyone, and welcome to This Week in Football from the makers of Low Limit Football on the Beyond the Pitch and FNX Media Networks. I'm your host, Joe Uccello, and tonight we open our Gold Cup preview series highlighting Group D. Joining me, as always, my co-host, Mr. Roberto Rojas, and from the YanksAreComing.com, Mr. Neil Blackman. Gentlemen, thank you both for joining me. I want to take a look and dive right into this Group D right away. USA leads the way, ranked 24th in the world. Panama second at 74th in the world. Trinidad and Tobago 93rd in the world. And Guyana at 175th in the world. Neil, I want to throw it over to you first and get your initial thoughts on this group as it shapes up, especially for the from the U.S. perspective.
I feel like every Gold Cup group is pretty favorable. But I think that this is an interesting one just because the U.S. center is not playing particularly well. And you have this situation where Trinidad is playing really well. Panama's kind of in between generations. So it's a good group, but not an entirely – it's not something the U.S. can overlook.
You know, just looking real quick, Neil, into this group as a whole, I mean, you would think that having looked at it and looking at all the other groups, you could say that this one is perhaps the more even one out of all of them because of the intense competition that there is. Obviously, we have the United States there, as you would say, the key favorites. But I think you have to realize that teams like Panama and Trinidad and Tobago, who one team went to the World Cup while the other one gave a good reminder of what happened at the hexagonal just 2 years ago. So there is that potential of such a debate in regards to a battle for second place between Panama and Trinidad and Tobago, and even Guyana, maybe, if they could cause a shock. But just looking forward into the main storylines or perhaps the matchup, what's the one game that you think will be the most interesting one? And, you know, having looked at it completely, do you feel like this might be a bit straightforward for the United States despite the recent struggles they've had in pre-Gold Cup friendlies?
So I think it is the most difficult group because it's the group with two hex teams, which you pointed out. But I think that it's not, and I think it could be straightforward. So kind of a cop-out answer. The most interesting game for me is USA Trinidad and Tobago in Cleveland on the 22nd, which is the lone Saturday game in the group, or the lone weekend game in the group. And I think that game either complicates things for the United States or makes it fairly straightforward, just because we saw Trinidad play really well against Japan last week. I'm interested to see how they play in Los Angeles after, you know, flying across the world to play Japan. How do they bounce back and play tomorrow against Canada? Because I think there's potential for that team. The American players that were in Cuba are not going to take them lightly, and I'm sure that they'll have the U.S.'s full attention, but you know, if you don't win that game, it sets up a testy game against Panama to close the group against, a Panama side that, as we all know, is at every level of international soccer difficult to play against.
Well, you know, Joe, I mean, you know, giving your impressions and repeating what Neil had said, you know, what is your vision of this group and where do you think it shapes up for all these teams?
You know, like Neil said, it is the toughest group. It is quote unquote the group of death because, like you said, we have three hexagonal teams if you count the United States in there with Panama, Trinidad and Tobago. There's also, when we look at things of like rivalries or that sort of thing, I mean, obviously USA-Mexico is going to be the biggest rivalry, but there's a little bit of spite here between these three teams when you look at Panama, Trinidad, and the U.S., because the U.S. 8 years ago eliminated Panama from the World Cup, with that late goal by Graham Zusi, if I remember correctly. And then you fast forward to missing the World Cup a couple of years ago where they went down to Trinidad and Tobago, lost to a B-side, really, which eliminated them from the World Cup. So there's a little bit of venom there, I think, for this U.S., and maybe a little bit of a chip on their shoulder. But like Neil said, and I think we all agree, the most recent friendlies that this U.S. national team has played is a little concerning. We saw it even today with a 3-0 beating from Venezuela, a team that, you know, Rob, you and I, we just completed our Copa America series. And although we think Venezuela is a nice, tight team, it's a flashy team, it's a team on the rise, you would expect the U.S. to get a better result than 3-0 at home than what we saw today. So I think it's concerning, that especially given that was the last friendly before this tournament kicks off next week, that they didn't really look the part to me. And I think we're going to have to keep an eye on that, because it does help that they do get a kind of a, let's call it a cupcake matchup in Guyana as the first matchup, so they can kind of get their feet under them in this tournament when they play in St. Paul, Minnesota on the 18th. But that Trinidad and Tobago game is going to be so, so difficult, because this is not a B Trinidad and Tobago team. This is not a B-side that they're bringing. This is going to be their A team, and I think that is going to be concerning. So I want to look at some of the players, because I want to start, actually, I'm going to go to you first, Neil, with Trinidad and Tobago. Kevin Molino coming in on this one, the Minnesota United midfielder, 19 goals and 43 caps. This is a midfield-heavy team when you look at the roster. I was looking over it a little earlier, and they're only bringing two strikers in Lester Pelletier and Sheldon Winchester. That's it. So they're going to be a midfield heavy. They're going to look to dominate that midfield third of the field, which I think could cause problems for the United States. What's your thoughts on the way this team is constructed for TNT that could cause those problems?
Well, I talked to Dennis Lawrence, their coach, last week, and I think that they kind of feel like Levi Garcia, who was a really highly regarded prospect and is now kind of filtered out to get playing time, I think. He's a guy that can kind of spell in and play some forward if they need him to. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, you know a lot of these guys. I mean, Kayvon George is a guy I have a lot of respect for, and, you know, plays for Charlotte Independence, but I think is better than the club he's playing for. We all know what Kevin Molino can do. Jovan Jones just came back from Germany. Didn't go that well for him there, but we all certainly know what he's capable of. He's a guy that's given the U.S. problems. Kaleem Highland is a guy I think could play in a lot of places in the world. And just, you know, hey, kudos to him for getting all the money to play in the Middle East, right? Sure. So that's a good – they have a lot of solid midfielders, and it's a diverse midfield. I don't think I brought up Cordell Cato, who, you know, is another MLS guy that we're all pretty familiar with. So I think, their team that keeps the ball, that has a little bit of sauce when it comes to creativity. But more importantly, they're going to be difficult to break down. That's been the way they've played under Dennis Lawrence. And, I really think that Sheldon Winchester is a guy that, you know, he's fast enough to create some problems on the counter. I don't know what really the top level of his game is, but they have some options on the counterattack, and they certainly will test the U.S. from distance, just as they did in Cuba. They've got some guys that can hit the wonder strike as well.
No doubt about it. I want to go look at Panama now, and Rob, I want to come to you first. Gabriel Torres leads this team with 13 goals internationally. No Roman Torres in this one. Blas Parris has sailed off into the sunset, which was kind of their instigator. For the World Cup debutants from last year, do you think they can carry that momentum into this Gold Cup tournament, Rob?
Of course. I think when you do come back from, you know, qualifying for the World Cup for the first time, you know, obviously for Panama, it was a significant achievement to the disgust of all of us here because of not qualifying. But I think for the achievement that they've been able to do, I think that confidence can, you know, boost them up just a little heading into this Gold Cup. Obviously, they're with another manager as Hernando Dio Gomez left to join the Ecuadorian team. So it's going to be very different. It's going to be interesting to see how this team goes going forward. I mean, they haven't won a friendly. I think they played, if I'm not mistaken, like 10 friendlies ever since the World Cup, and they didn't win any of them, even though they did tie Brazil in one game, and I think tied South Korea. But, you know, you have to also look at this Gold Cup as a chance to perhaps bring in that boost and to bring in that kind of momentum in such a tournament like this. It would be very interesting to see that they do play Trinidad in that first game in St. Paul, because I feel that the winner of such a game, or would indeed like gets the result there, could indeed give them the momentum to qualify out of the group, if you would expect them to do that. So it's going to be very interesting. But I mean, like you said, this group is a group of death. If you have to call it, we have to call it out. We have three teams from that were participating in the Hex. You also have to realize that they do have some history. Of course, Panama did make the Gold Cup final back in 2013, only losing to the United States, ironically. So they do have that experience in such a competition like this. And we'll just have to wait and see. I mean, going into this group, I mean, just going in forward, and Joe, I'll start with you here. Yeah. I mean, you would think it would be pretty straightforward for the United States to, you know, to win this group, because I think anything below that, despite them qualifying perhaps at second place, would be very, very lackluster on their end. And I think in the end, it'll be a battle between Panama and Trinidad and Tobago, don't you think?
Yeah, you would expect the United States to advance out of the group, and Panama and Trinidad and Tobago, watching that first match on the 18th, would kind of cannibalize each other in terms of that second place, and that match is going to go a long ways. So you expect the U.S. to be able to advance, but like we've said, you know, there is going to be tougher tests for the United States moving forward. I think key for the U.S. here is going to be to make a statement right off the bat against Guyana, where they're going to have to come out and play, post like a 4-0, 5-0, some crazy number like that, to show that they are capable of blowing out a team, because we haven't seen it recently. And then I think from there, maybe it sends notice to Panama and Trinidad and Tobago, who kind of duke it out, you know, in the earlier match on the day, that it sends a message to them saying, hey, listen, we're here to score goals, we're here to win the tournament. And I think they can make that statement by showing it on the field. I do want to ask, Neil, I want to ask you one more question. I do want to go back to the United States and stick with the United States, because much was made this week about the omission of Josh Sargent, and for me, even Bobby Wood, in favor of Josie Altidore and Jordan Morris. Your thoughts on Greg Berhalter's decision to select Altidore and Morris over Josh Sargent?
Inexcusable. I mean, and you guys have had me on a couple times, and thanks for having me again. You know, I'm not really a hot take guy. Right. It's inexcusable. Yeah. And really, Berhalter and Ernie Stewart, for that matter, they owe people an explanation, and a better one than we got yesterday. And kudos to Jeff Karloff for hunting one down. Mm-hmm. But I think this idea of fitness or training with his club in Germany is really nonsensical to me. Mm-hmm. And you know, you need to pick one or the other. If you were Berhalter and Stewart, you needed to have him either at the U20 tournament, where we saw Sebastian Soto do a really nice job kind of playing a little bit out of his comfort zone. Mm-hmm. But still, yesterday in the loss to Ecuador, the United States really needed an out-and-out number nine who could win a 50-50, and they didn't have that. And I thought that was a problem. And, you know, what was the point of bringing Josh in? And quite honestly, if Greg was concerned, and I'm interested in Roberto's take on it, because and yours, Joe, yeah, because if Greg was concerned about his match fitness, right, if he didn't think he was fit, then he should, you don't bring him into a senior team camp, period.
Right.
You know, you let Tab Ramos and a youth manager deal with that. So I think it was really a waste of Josh Sargent's time, and it's a disservice to probably one of the three or four brightest prospects the United States have. And it's just kind of symptomatic of this malaise that kind of sits over the men's program right now in rant.
Right. Rob, I'll
jump in actually, yeah, and talk about that. Yeah, I think it is inexcusable, as you said, and you all agree. I think because of the experience that he has given, and the fact that, you know, he is one of the brightest prospect, maybe the brightest prospect alongside Pulisic at the moment in this United States team, I feel like it is becoming a waste of time, especially coming into a camp and then being cut for that. So it's weird. I mean, you know, what would have been him to, you know, participate in the U20 World Cup? I mean, obviously, we all know what happened to them, but, you know, if it wasn't going to be that, it had to be the Gold Cup, and we all knew that he was already capable of playing for the senior team, and I feel that the potential that he has really should have been on this team. So we'll just have to wait and see. I mean, obviously, if the United States do fail to actually win this Gold Cup, I think a lot of questions will be back directed to Berhalter, not calling up a player like Josh Sargent, you know, that would have been the youngest player on this team, and would have provided, you know, in the sense experience, but also, you know, youth and flair and whatnot. That's, you know, a player like, I don't know, like Jazzy Sardes or Jordan Morris or Josie Altidore is not providing. So especially them being at the more older stage, with him being 19. So it's inexcusable. I mean, Joe, I mean, yeah. You have to include him on this team.
I'm with both of you on this. It is inexcusable. Here's the thing. For a 19-year-old Josh Sargent, you have to give him summer minutes here somewhere. And Neil, like you said, if you know you're not going to bring him to this Gold Cup tournament, you have to have Tab Ramos take him at that U-20. He has to go. The fact that he doesn't go to the U-20 almost automatically puts him onto this Gold Cup squad, because in the end, the Gold Cup for me is a twofold tournament. One, you want to win it. It's your regional tournament. Internationally, you want to be the Gold Cup champion. I think it's important to put that trophy in the case. But two, especially given the disaster of not qualifying for the 2018 World Cup, you have to focus your team on making that run for 2022. You have to get in. It is imperative that the United States qualifies for the 2022 World Cup. It is if you thought not qualifying for 2018 was a disaster, don't qualify for 2018 and 2022. That is a bona fide nightmare. And Josh Sargent is going to be that striker at 2022. Let's be honest. It's going to be Josh Sargent. It's going to be Bobby Wood. I don't know that Josie Altidore is going to be there at 33 years old. You just can't take him. You know, Jordan Morris, you know, has been nice, and he's done fairly well at the Seattle Sounders, but he's never shown that type of quality that we've seen out of 19-year-old Josh Sargent. So I think it's a massive mistake. It's inexcusable, and you have to, I mean, I know as journalists and as podcasters, we've been questioning this U.S. men's national team and the Soccer Federation for a while now, whether it be the Berhalter choice or, you know, how long it took or whatever. But this decision goes up there with those. And I think it becomes, like you said, inexcusable. I do want to ask one more inexcusable question for me, you know, that I've noticed Berhalter doing lately. That is playing Tyler Adams at right back. I don't understand why Tyler Adams is playing at right back when clearly when he's playing over at Leipzig, he's playing much more centrally in the midfield. I know Berhalter's wanted to use him as a wild card, but Neil, I want to throw that one to you too. Do you feel that Greg Berhalter's got it all wrong with Tyler Adams?
Yeah, I mean, look, I understand that Greg is committed to a system, and the biggest requirement in that system appears to be, although he brought in Omar Gonzalez, which just because you played in Mexico doesn't mean that you can help build possession from the back.
Right.
But, you know, it appears to be that's a something that he wants to do, and he wants to be able to rely on having that extra distributional outlet and player that can help build that possession from the back. And that's why he wants Adams over there. But if you're going to do that, and we saw it today, you better be sure that the players that you have in his stead in the central midfield are capable of carrying the weight. And to be honest, you know, the reason that Michael Bradley, for example, is still involved in this team is because he's the only other guy that can do that job effectively. Right. You know, we've seen that Will Trapp can't. Dwayne Holmes isn't really a six. I think he's a good player. I actually rate Paxton Pomacall above him, but here we are, and Holmes is in the team. So, you know, you have to have someone else that can do Tyler Adams' job, and it's a job that Adams does for a team that's going to be in the Champions League. So, you know, is it silly to play one of the, like Roberto said, one of the three best American prospects out of position immediately? Yeah, I think it's kind of silly, and especially given the current state and condition of the player pool.
I agree. Rob, how about you? Your thoughts on Tyler Adams playing where he shouldn't?
Inexcusable. Is it the word that we're repeating here? No, I mean, I think it's not something that, and it's not even just Greg Berhalter. I mean, obviously this is something that happens in a lot of managers around the world. If you see players playing out of position or not in the right position, and you don't get their best performing in the national team. I think with Tyler Adams, you know, you see what he's able to do at Leipzig. You see the position that he plays into that midfield, and you see the importance that he provides on that team. So you have to put him in that position, you know. And you look at the midfielders on this team. Michael Bradley, Will Trapp, Weston McKennie, Pulisic, Roldan, and Dwayne Holmes. You would think that, you know, if you include an extra midfielder, that's six midfielders there, you include one, it's a seven. It works out best. I mean, you don't need that many defenders, and you don't need those so little midfielders. So I think Tyler Adams really needs to be in the position of where he's going to suit best for this team and work well. Hopefully that Greg Berhalter will be able to function and fix before the start of the Gold Cup. Now, talking into the Gold Cup, we'll talk about predictions here. I mean, you would think, as I said, I think the United States should be the key favorites. I'll go for my prediction of this group. I think, albeit a catastrophe of beyond expectation, I expect the United States to win this group. I would assume they would perhaps win all of their games, but I think they're going to have a tough time, perhaps against Panama, just because of the history there. But I think they will have a tough time. But I see the United States qualifying as first. The second battle, and I think the battle between Panama and Trinidad and Tobago will really decide that winner. If I had to choose, I just think that Panama are just a bit better than Trinidad and Tobago, and I put them into second, but it'll be very close between second and third in terms of points. So with the United States first, Panama second, Trinidad and Tobago third, Guyana fourth. Neil, what's your prediction on this group?
So I'm going to pick Trinidad and Tobago to win the group.
Wow.
And I just think that they have a kind of quality in the midfield that the U.S. lack right now. And they have an understanding and a familiarity with their system and expectations that I think is valuable. So I think they'll get a draw with the U.S. and then they'll win the group on goal difference. Largely because I do think that, like Rob said, I think that Panama can give the United States trouble. What's interesting to me about Panama is that they really are kind of in between generations. Like, I was really impressed with what they did at the U-20 World Cup. Mm-hmm. They had a very hard group and, you know, got out of it because you can get out in third. But they didn't play very well in the round of 16 game, but they played really well in their group stage games. And that was without a couple key players that they ended up bringing to this team. You know, but the old guard, as Joe referenced earlier, as you referenced earlier, Joe, the old guard is kind of gone. And, you know, we didn't get to see them in their prime at a World Cup, which I think stinks. Like the fact that Zusi scored that goal, that they finally get to a World Cup and they were all too old, right?
Yeah.
And so they won the World Cup from the celebration standpoint. Like, oh my gosh, it's great that they're there. Mm-hmm. But their young guard it's really interesting. It's like right in Rob's wheelhouse, because like a lot of their young players are kind of they're doing the opposite of like Miguel Almiron. Like a lot of them are going to South America and playing, and they're getting a lot of games in okay leagues, right? Mm-hmm. And so I think that's really interesting, but I think they're probably like a Gold Cup away, so it'll be interesting to see them in qualifiers, which is a long roundabout way of saying I think they can give the U.S. problems, but I don't see them winning either against the United States or Trinidad and Tobago. So I'm going to pick Trinidad in an upset to win the group, which I don't think is really that much of an upset based on current form. I mean, the U.S. just got absolutely hosed by Venezuela today and really thoroughly outplayed by Jamaica as well. So I think if the U.S. wins the group, you know, that'd be a pleasant surprise.
Definitely. Joe, what do you think?
Yeah, I was going to go with the U.S. winning the group. Rob, when you gave your prediction of Panama second, TNT third, I thought I was going to be overly dramatic by saying no, TNT is going to be second, Panama third, because I do feel that this team, and I was mistaken, Roman Torres is on this roster for the 23 for Panama, but you look up and down the lineup, Machado's 34, Roman Torres is 33, Gabriel Torres at striker is 30 years old, Quintero is 31 years old, Armando Cooper is 31 years old. These guys are all past that 30 line, and so I think they're a little too old, where Trinidad and Tobago, like we've looked at earlier, is a much younger team, a much more fiery team, and I think Trinidad and Tobago is going to finish second in this group ahead of Panama, and I think that the first game between Panama and TNT is going to be probably the most entertaining of the matches that we're going to see out of this group entirely. But I do think U.S. will pip it overall. I think there will be some squeaky bum moments in this tournament. It wouldn't shock me if all of a sudden Panama was up 2-1 in the 70th minute when Panama and the U.S. face each other. That's the kind of thing that would not shock me. I would expect the U.S. to overcome. But I think in the end, you probably will see U.S. first, TNT second for me, Panama third, and Guyana fourth. Neil, I want to close out with one last question. Of the four teams we've looked at here in Group D, is there a potential final participant in this group, or even an eventual champion? And why do you think that?
Yeah, I mean, so I know I just picked Panama to finish third,
yeah.
But you know, I wouldn't be stunned if they made a run to the finals. I don't think that Trinidad in knockout games can necessarily score enough goals to get to the finals. And then I think the U.S. could get to the finals just because, you know, we haven't seen them with Christian Pulisic and with Michael Bradley and with Tyler Adams all on the field together. So we don't know if that drastically improves things. Right. Certainly if it's Christian playing the way he was playing at the end of his time at Dortmund, then, you know, outside of Mexico and maybe even including Mexico, is there going to be a better player in the tournament? And we've all seen what a great player can do in an international tournament because it's a small sample size. So I think the United States or Panama could make a final. But I think it's going to be tough beyond that.
Rob, how about you?
It's going to be tough too. I think there's just so many other teams out there that could indeed upset in this Gold Cup. Knowing the history of the Gold Cup, you tend to also have those kind of upsets. But I generally don't. It's going to be tough. I mean, you would think the United States would be considered a finalist. You would think that Panama could cause a shock, as I said in my prediction. But also, like Neil and you said, Trinidad and Tobago are also on the uprising with their youth, so they could definitely cause a surprise. I just don't know if I will see any of these teams in the final or even winning. And maybe the United States, I'm not even joking. I don't want to sound as pessimistic as I want to be, but it's going to be really tough.
I was.
The United States, well, of course, but it's early days. I mean, you know, people are saying already Berhalter out after like the first five games, and even that would not be something that shows progress. So, I honestly don't see any of these teams making the final. As bad as that seems, I just don't see it, unfortunately.
I mean, for me, the U.S. is playing at home. All their matches are at home. This is the U.S.'s tournament, really, is what it's come down to over the past few years, because they play all their matches at home. With the amount of talent on this team, it's almost inexcusable for them not to at least make the final. But the sad thing is that we're actually talking about them not making the final, which would be crazy, you know, considering the talent that they have on the team, the fact that they're playing all their matches at home. You're not traveling to Honduras and you're getting woken up by the fire alarm at 3 a.m. like we see in CONCACAF all the time. So I feel like the U.S. can make it. I agree with you, Neil, that with Trinidad and Tobago, the fact of the inexperience, I think you need experience on a team to be able to win a one-off. Talent will get you very, very far, but sometimes it's the little things that experience gives you that, you know, unfortunately will cost you a one-off match. And so I don't think Trinidad and Tobago have it. I think Panama might have had it 3 years ago, right, gentlemen, when we talk about Panama being in their prime, but it didn't come together. Also, the change in coach there, I don't think they can do it. So I think if there is a team that is capable or is that possibly will win this tournament, I think it is going to be the United States. But at the same time, Costa Rica's a very good side. We've seen what Mexico's looked like under Tata Martino. They've been ridiculously good. Honduras, although they didn't show it today against Brazil, is definitely an up-and-coming team. So there are pitfalls to getting to that final, I think, in all the other groups. But I think if you had to pick one, it would be the United States in this one. Can I
just jump in real quick, gentlemen, definitely, and ask this? Do you think the vibe of this particular Gold Cup has changed, especially now with the with the extinction of the Confederations Cup?
So my answer to that is sort of that it's sort of nuanced. I think it would be different if the U.S. had played competitive football in the last 2 years. But this, you know, this coming week will be the first competitive match for a United States men's national team, senior team, in 20 months. Right. So I think there's some pressure on the Federation to produce results. And, you know, for all the, oh, just blood the kids people, like, you can't necessarily treat this tournament like that, because people are looking for some signs of tangible progress to latch their, you know, teeth into. That said, yeah, I mean, obviously the fact that there's no Confederations Cup in Qatar is unfortunate, because those were really good chances for CONCACAF teams to get big games. And in a world where the United States is not going to go to Copa Americas for whatever reason, you know, that's unfortunate. And, so I think it is a little different, but there's still a lot of incentive to kind of get out there and produce.
I think, you know, Rob, to answer your question, even to build on Neil's point, I think there's more incentive under the United States side than on the other teams like Trinidad and Tobago and Panama. Panama has kind of picked up their golden chalice. They got to the World Cup. So they've played competitive football recently. Neil points out the great point that the U.S. has not played a competitive match in 20 months. That is concerning. And on the U.S. Soccer Federation, it is important right now to produce results, because the U.S. soccer fan needs something tangible. They need something that they can hang their hat on and say, yes, this is going in the right direction. You know, we feel like our players as individuals are getting better. You talk about Tyler Adams going over to the Bundesliga. You talk about Pulisic making the big move to Chelsea. Weston McKennie really up and coming at Schalke this year. We've seen the progression of the individual. But I think as a federation, you know, when you strap on that U.S. jersey and you get at it, that's where the U.S. soccer fan wants something tangible. And I think this Gold Cup is more important, especially because there is no Confederations Cup where they could, you know, they could move on and play something like that. So this is going to be your top level competition until the next World Cup. And I think the U.S. fan demands something, you know, much more tangible in terms of an outcome than just maybe a third place or a fourth place finish or something like that. I think they want something that they can hang their hat on to say, yes, the U.S. Soccer Federation, the U.S. national team, we are moving in the right direction. This is progress, and this is what progress looks like on the pitch. And I think that's what the U.S. fan is going to focus on. So, gentlemen, I do want to thank you both for joining me tonight and helping me open the preview series for the CONCACAF Gold Cup. So for Neil Blackman and for Roberto Rojas, I'm Joe Uccello. Thanks for listening, and good night.